So here we go in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to Radio Flash, Armada's military electromagnetic spectrum podcast, with your host Tom Withington at the controls. Information is a strategic resource. It always was, but with fake news and disinformation by nefarious actors very much on the agenda, its manipulation risks having a profound effect on our democracies. How do we maneuver in the information space? And what steps should governments and militaries be taking to ensure we're safeguarded against disinformation's adverse effects? Ewan Stockbridge is the CEO of 360ISR, an operational support company specializing in the field of intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance. He joins us today from the Netherlands. Ewan, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Tom. It's nice to be here, or in the Netherlands, as you quite rightly said.
So to start with, you and I have been talking before we did this recording about the transition of dimensions of warfare from the physical space to the non-physical space. And I was wondering, I know this is an absolute huge question, but from your perspective, how does this manifest itself?
It's a great question. It is a massive question. The simple answer is the effect is profound within our societies. I think the information that we ascribe to in our daily, you know, smartphones that we pick up probably 5 or 6 times every 10 minutes to just check the newsfeed, check your Twitter, check your whatever you're going to check. We're inundated with data, and our culture at the moment is reliant on this need or thirst to be updated with data. And that's great, you know, to have 24/7 news, to have 24/7 access to your family. You know, as you know, Tom, I travel a lot. So to be able to reach into my social media and to get updates from my friends and family around the world is an awesome thing to do. But equally, it's our critical vulnerability. And it's a vulnerability that can be exploited. And it's not just me that's saying this. There's a growing community of people out there that are beginning to understand or have understood that maybe there are 2 battle fronts that we're fighting, maybe even more than 2. But the battle front that I'm seeing and I'm sort of focusing on at the moment is one that we've seen evolve probably since 2012, which is coincident with the change of Russian doctrine and Russian thinking about warfare. And their definition of information warfare. There was a great book written called The Russian Understanding of Warfare. And in this book, it's described how the Russians developed their concept of attacking not only an information infrastructure to deny our ability to communicate, but they're also going to attack what they call information psychological, the way in which we receive and understand information. And that attack has manifested itself many times over the last 10 years, and we can see its iteration growing within the Ukrainian conflict. So I think the effect is profound. I think it's been with us for a while. It's what the military and some commentators would call sub-threshold activity. So it doesn't trigger a military response, but I would question that. My personal viewpoint is that although it is below the threshold of warfare as we define warfare today, arguably our definition of warfare should be changed, because the nature of warfare has evolved over the last 20 years and profoundly over the last 10 years. And you can see within that 10-year, you know, history, near history, key events that can not really prove what I'm saying is right, but add credibility and credence to it. And the first of those things is the obvious, you know, invasion of Crimea in 2014, which was effectively a bloodless or almost bloodless invasion, created and shaped by an information and a narrative warfare to convince an element of the Crimean Peninsula that they wanted to be Russian and they should be Russian. So therefore, when they asked for Russian help, it was an act of mercy in a way conducted by the Russian Federation to save their Russian population. You could equate it, and I'm going to be contentious, to our rescuing of the Falkland Islands in 1982. You know, the Brits on the island asked for our help and we went to help them, and quite rightly so. The difference is we didn't have to shape the Falkland Islands. That was a true and heartfelt requirement by British citizens for our help. Crimea was shaped by Russia. And that's my focus. If a population is being manipulated and shaped, and that results in a change of governance or even a change of government, is that an act of war? That's what I'm really focusing on, Tom.
One thing that I wanted to expand upon was the question of the military response to this maneuver in the information space. We're used to militaries, air forces, for example, having early warning functions. Royal Air Force in the UK, for instance, scans the heavens continuously to detect any incoming ballistic missile launches. Defence ministries, defence intelligence services continually watch for developments in countries around the world to get a sense of whether something's likely to erupt or whether conflict is imminent. We've seen that most recently in Sudan. And I wanted to get your thoughts on whether there needs to be a similar approach towards maneuver in the information space if a hostile actor or a near peer adversary, let's say, is doing something within that space that maybe becomes a threat. Is there a role for the military to play in detecting that and then responding, help or assisting the response?
I would imagine there are watchkeepers on the wall, you know, watching the cyber threats coming in against any nation that's out there that has the capability to defend against a cyber attack. And I, you know, it's common sense to suggest that people somewhere in an organization are watching that space. My observation is slightly deeper. Yes, we will be encroached in the cyber or information space. And yes, we will be encroached on the physical space. So we may have an invasion as we're seeing in Ukraine, or we may have an information campaign and fake news on TikTok, for example, or any other social media platform, or even the media, you know, the media itself. But the impact of those activities is the important thing, because the impact of maneuver in the physical space or maneuver in the information space is to change the perceptions of the target audience. It's to, in the physical space, for example, Russia are trying to prove to their own target audience, their own population, that Russia are strong. And that's the message they are sending home to the target audience. And they're demonstrating to NATO that Russia are strong and unwilling to take any more expansionist, if you agree with that philosophy, the feeling that NATO is encroaching to the east. So there is a message of strength. And the message is manifested with maneuver, artillery and aircraft fighting a bloody war in a circa, you know, World War II, almost World War I fashion. So very old-fashioned attritional warfare. But the difference with Ukraine and what most commentators are missing is, why are they doing it? Why are Russia doing this? The first order of effects is to gain control over the Ukraine. They've lost that. So why are they doing it? And they're doing it to continue the narrative. And the narrative, as I said, is focused on their target audience and our target audience to prove that Russia is strong. So physical maneuver is important and a, you know, catastrophic and a very ugly face of war, which I would never play down in its significance or its magnitude. But the effect is levered against or aimed against the general population of mainland Europe and Britain and America. Likewise, the information campaign, yes, we're going to have, you know, fake news and floods with information operations from Russia and other, you know, third-party actors out there. And it's It's intended at the first order to confuse the information space, but the ultimate intent is to change the way in which we view the war, and maybe even trying to persuade us as a European population to vote in a government that disagrees with the war. And again, there are slight similarities you can see with the recent Italian election, where the incoming prime minister of Italy, she said that why should we spend money on the Ukraine when we can't afford to put fuel in the houses of Italian people? And that's a valid argument. But is that argument stemmed from her own thinking, or is it stemmed from, you know, manipulation from overseas? So although we have physical maneuver and although we have information maneuver, the intended target is in the, what I call the cognitive domain. And, you know, if you go far as back to Clausewitz, going to staff college mode, the ultimate purpose of war is to change the will or perceptions of the adversary. And that's a cognitive thing. That's in somebody's mind. And we change their minds through punching them in the face until they say yes, you know, physical maneuver. Or we convince them through argument and discussion, information maneuver. And those two, you know, activities manifest themselves in warfare as hard fighting on the front line and information maneuver and fake news in the information space. But the intended, or, you know, the intended purpose is cognitive shift. So, you know, it's more than just physical activity and non-physical activity. It's the effect, the end effect in the cognitive domain. And, you know, to follow on with that and to speak very quickly about should we do something about it, in my opinion, yes. And does that lie with the military? Again, in my opinion, yes, it does, because I consider regime change as an act of war. And if a third party is going to manipulate with a democratic process and it causes a shift or a redirection in a country and it causes regime change, it is no different from the activities of the coalition in Iraq or Libya when Gaddafi was changed and we had regime change. And it was a stated American policy. That was the purpose of the Iraqi war. So you could argue, and again, to be contentious, that the Brexit vote, if it was manipulated, and there is strong evidence to say it was manipulated by a third party, and it caused a change in government. It caused a general election. It caused us to leave the EU and break that stability with the main countries in the EU. It weakened the European Union. But moreover, it broke the connection between America and the EU. We were the conduit, and America had to find a new route in. So it disrupted the EU cohesion. So it makes sense that it was a manipulated effect, and therefore it was a regime change. So in my opinion, again, I think it does fall to the military, because I consider that an act of war. But I am, you know, not a lone wolf in my thinking. Most people would consider this a national defense or a national problem conducted by your national security agencies. But I would consider this is definitely in the remit of warfare.
So, Ewan, you mentioned just now the Brexit referendum, and I know you and I discussed that question regarding the levels of misinformation and before we embarked on this chat, and it's something I've discussed with other people. Brexit strikes me as a really interesting one, because if it had been Russian intention to weaken the EU, which I firmly believe it was. I think Mr. Putin and his cronies see the European Union as a clear and present threat to their regime's survival. And I think he sees NATO, I think he sees as the strategic threat. And I think he sees the EU, if you like, as the governmental threat, that's going to bring lots of horrible things for him, like human rights and respect for rule of law and free elections and all of the things Mr. Putin, as we know, thoroughly enjoys. But Brexit's an interesting one, because if that was the intention, on one hand, it could be argued that to an extent the Russians lost, because what happened when the time came for the crunch in Ukraine was that the British government doubled down on its support for the Ukrainians. And by all from certainly by all intents and purposes and how things seem now, looking at the UK, if there is a change of government in a year's time with a general election, the leader of the opposition, Keir Starmer, has been very emphatic that that support will continue. So that may be quite an interesting one about how perhaps sometimes there's a risk factor to this information. You might not always get what you want by trying to employ it.
I mean, absolutely. But you could say the same about physical maneuver and information maneuver. The classic Second World War blitz of the UK cities was designed to break our spirit. And in the result, it actually reversed that and galvanized us behind Churchill to fight them in the trenches and fight them in the streets. So I think with any maneuver, military maneuver, it's not a roll of the dice. You plan and you try to predict the outcome of your maneuver, but you can't control it. And probably more so in the information space, we can drop the pebble in the water metaphorically, and the ripples will go out. We hope those ripples will affect what we want them to affect. But once we've dropped the Twitter bomb and once we've dropped the fake news, we can't control it. It's down to the general public to perpetuate or make it go viral, those things out there that we can't control. So yeah, maybe Putin's intent was to weaken Europe. Whether they did or not, is up to a European specialist to decide. I'm not that at all. I'm just an observer of manipulation of the cognitive space. But I definitely think it was an attempt to weaken the EU. And I think the same tactics, whenever I look at the Ukraine and the lessons to be drawn from the Ukraine as we go through it, a lot of commentators are focusing on hardware, which is to an extent is understandable. We want to learn how UAVs are employed because things have changed, how artillery is being integrated. That's all changing, and we're learning massive lessons or relearning massive lessons that we learned generation ago. But more importantly, we've got to look at, if I was Russian, if I was Putin, and I was defending against all of these lovely democratic processes that he's trying to fend off, what would I do? Now, I'm not going to attack NATO because that is just ridiculous. An Article 5 issue, I don't think it's on his drawing board. He'll talk about it, but of course, that's part of the narrative. Russia are strong, Europe are weak. Therefore, Ukraine, you come with me. And that's pretty much the argument or the narrative. So if he's not going to attack NATO directly, what is his recourse? And the recourse is probably an Article 4 to attack the resilience or the ability of a nation to mount military response by undermining public opinion, by taking away the mandate of the government, so we don't want to go to war, and therefore we won't go to war. We've seen that through the last 25 years. If the population of a nation doesn't want their government to go to war, there'll be a democratic vote, and we don't go to war. So that's where I would attack. And how would I attack that cohesion? I would attack the social frictions that already exist in any community, be it racial lines, be it financial lines or economies. And economy is probably the big thing now, the cost of living crisis. How can I make that worse? How can I segregate a community? Because some people don't have fuel, some people can afford it. Therefore, I'm gonna target that friction point. And if I can get information into that friction point, if I can do something to stimulate the natural frictions you would have in a society, then you can break that society apart. And if I can do that, I can change a government. And it's an age-old tactic. It goes back millennia to undermine a governing or a leader by subverting the subordinates. But now, I think the difference is that I can, not I, but one can target another individual. I can profile somebody online, work out who is susceptible to coercion or some sort of manipulation, identify those people that are open to manipulation and have a following, and they're my targets. So I'm going to feed them in an insidious way that will take them on a journey from, I don't know, liking veterans on a veterans Facebook site to being a right-wing extremist. And I'll take them on that journey over 3 years so they don't see the change. And all of a sudden, they're posting stuff which, if they knew what they were posting, they shouldn't be posting. And they become the perpetuator of this story. And if it comes from, you know, if the story is reposted from a known advocate of Veterans Society, for example, it becomes, you know, it becomes a sort of a piece of information that I can draw on. It's not fake news anymore. It's being told to me by somebody I trust. So we can get into a society through various mechanisms to create frictions, and we can look at how I'm going to not only cause those frictions, but use those frictions to cause change or undermine the ability. So again, taking Ukraine as the example, because it is the shining light at the moment, or the shining example at the moment. If I was Russian, I know that if I can attack the resupply of the Ukrainian front line, and if I can attack the support of the EU, the UK and America, then the Ukraine will lose. Therefore, if I can undermine a government's support, so the Dutch government, the British government, the French government, if I can undermine their willingness to support the Ukraine by changing the democratic process underneath them, they will stop supporting the Ukraine, and therefore the Ukraine will lose. So that's my attack mechanism. It's not an Article 5, it's an Article 4 that will come in through the back door. We won't even see it. It's probably going on right now. We won't even see it until it's too late. And I think we're seeing it manifest itself in the southern states of Europe more so than the northern, because they're under greater strains from migration and economy and all sorts of different problems that they're facing in the south. And I think that's where the problem will come from, through their resilience and not through any of their own fault. You know, some of my best friends are from the southern states, nations, but it's just because they are on the front line of probably the next form of warfare, which is an Article 4 resilience attack. It is so insidious, and it's so difficult to defend against. Again, it brings me back to my former point, that my belief that this is a military requirement to defend against an attack such as this, and therefore it falls within my intelligence community, my intelligence, surveillance and reconnaissance community, to understand what is changing, and importantly, who is pulling the trigger. Again, if you just, you know, for another example, I think it was last year, or the year before, I think, actually, the Polish-Belarusian border incident where migrants were being pushed across. Now, the migrants, any European, well, most Europeans are socially minded, and they all see these mothers and children being pushed across the border. And I would hope most of us would want to put a warm blanket around them and say, you're safe, you're home, whatever, but you're safe. And these poor people, these migrants were being pushed and motivated to go across the border. The Polish didn't want them across because it would destabilize their country. The migrants are the delivery system of social sort of friction building, which will cause cognitive change. It will cause a far right or a right wing anti-migrant belief, or it will cause a social belief, or the both, and then you get friction. But the guys that pulled the trigger are the guys responsible for the action, not the migrants themselves. The guys that pushed from Belarusia, pushed migrants or encouraged those migrants to cross, they are the weapon system. They're the guys that pulled the trigger. And the migrants, in this analogy, are the bullet, unfortunately, that's coming across. They are innocent, socially justified people. And to us as a military organization, that gives us a problem that we are ill-prepared or unprepared to deal with. We can deal with tanks coming across the border. It's an open military threat. But when the delivery system is somebody as socially ambiguous as a mother and child, then we have a problem.
I think it chimes with something we were talking about in Germany at the Association of Old Crows Electronic Warfare Conference the other week, which was the theme of the conference was multi-domain integration. So as opposed to multi-domain operations, this is about, okay, how do we really look at having not only a whole of government approach, but if you like, an every stakeholder approach to the conflicts we're going to face in the future. Because as you mentioned just now, with that example with Belarus, the response of a government to that, it is not only military, it then involves the interior authorities of the country, it involves NGOs, it probably involves local businesses, it involves local people. And we live in a globalized world now. And because we live in a globalized world, I think that has an impact on how our governments respond to problems, because we just can't stovepipe them anymore. And I was interested in something you said earlier on, Ewan, about that sort of whole of government approach. If we're going to look at this, the military is a very important part of that answer, but it's not necessarily the only answer. And how do we bring in other government and other elements of our society, and how do we get them working together?
I think that's key. You can look at the dime approach, or you can look at the current NATO thinking in allied command transformation. Recently, they've established cognitive warfare as a research area, or as an area in which they're going to try and understand more. And their response, NATO's response to cognitive warfare, is resilience and training. So we're now going to encourage nations to become resilient to fake news, to become aware of where fake news or manipulation is coming from, because we can't censor anybody, because that's against the liberal democracies that we all hold high. So we have to become, within our open societies, aware of where we may be being manipulated and we may be being fed fake news. And this will become a whole government, or a whole, I would say, a citizen's responsibility, where we take ownership of our nation and we think, okay, I am being manipulated. So it is a whole government response. It does involve NGOs, you're quite right, especially in the case of Belarus and Poland. And I would imagine in the next 3 years, it's going to happen in Africa. We're going to have a mass migration from the Sahel to Southern Europe. So where does the military fit in this? And I think it fits in various different ways. Just like the military would be responsible with understanding and finding a missile system, as we did, you know, in Iraq, the Scud hunts that were infamous throughout Iraq. It was the military's responsibility to find the weapons delivery systems and the people that were going to fire those systems. So these systems were designated as threats, and therefore a threat falls to the generically to the military to understand. And if we consider a manipulation of a migratory population or any other social event, and it causes a military threat, then I consider that to be a military problem to solve. It is ambiguous, and we're not structured to deal with this situation right now. And the recently outgoing CDS of the UK, Chief of Defence Staff, he made a great speech in 2001 about the integrated operating system for the UK, in which he articulates the sort of mission space in which we operate right now. And to paraphrase him, he said, you know, the liberal democratic values that we hold so high, the freedoms of speech, freedoms of protest, and our human rights, are the very weaknesses that the enemy will exploit. And we have to find a way of upholding our liberal democracies and our freedoms that we so much value, without giving away or becoming vulnerable to manipulation by a third party. And it's going to be a tough thing to do. And it will be a whole government. I think it will involve a lot of education, without being Orwellian about it. You know, it's not going to be Big Brother and, you know, you do this, because again, that breaks our liberal democracies. So it's going to have to be very sensitively done. I'm not an expert in this sort of field, so I'll leave it to the people that deal with resilience training. But effectively, we have to make our nation resilient and understand where we are being attacked and then how to deal with it. It's a massive question, as you quite rightly said. And although I've been looking at this problem for probably 5 or 6 years now, it has, at the moment, no real answer, only that, you know, if you consider the Crimea 2014 invasion as an information success, which it was, and if you consider Brexit to be an information manipulation piece by a third party, which it arguably was, then you've got evidence of activity in the information space designed to make cognitive change and cognitive shift within a target audience. And if you look at the Ukraine right now, we're seeing the same. We're seeing the hard fighting and the narrative war to facilitate from our side, from the pro-Zelensky side, support to the Ukraine. And from the Russian side is the galvanizing of the Russian spirit and the prevention of a counter-narrative from within Russia to contest what is going on in Ukraine. And it's all about winning what we would call in the good old days, hearts and minds. So it's nothing new. The new bit is the fidelity of targeting. It's like the invention or the introduction of precision air-to-surface weapons. It's not new, we're still dropping bombs, but it changed warfare because now I can take out a person or a thing. And the same way in this information space, it's not new, but what is new is the delivery system, and I can target an individual and make that individual believe what I want them to believe and then perpetuate that myth and change everybody else's minds.
Well, Ewan, that very handily takes us back full circle to where we kicked off the discussion. Something tells me that you and I are going to be continuing to have this discussion for some time. Yeah, it's certainly an absolutely intriguing subject. So let's get you back on again very soon. And listen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolute pleasure. And, you know, anytime you want me back, it's nice to have somebody to listen to me. it's great. It's I think it's an important subject. As I say, nothing to do with my narrative and my work, but NATO are picking on this now. There are works going on within the UK and other countries that I'm aware of to try and understand this hidden threat, maybe a strong word, this hidden problem that we may be experiencing in the cognitive world.
On that note, your shout out to the work NATO is doing there leads me to a shout out for the work that you and your colleagues, of course, are doing, where I believe they can visit your website at 360isr.com to learn more about your activities.
That's right. Yeah, 360ISR. Everything that we do is on there. And if you follow the blog and news page and the link at the top to the blog and news, there's many, many articles on cognitive warfare, fifth generation warfare and such. So you can follow all of our thinking on that webpage as well. Thank you very much.
Ewan, that's absolutely fantastic. And don't forget that there's more military electromagnetic news and analysis at armadainternational.com. That's all we've got time for. Thank you very much for listening.